the voice of the Cougars on the Cougar IMG Sports Network, Greg Wrubell, the Canuck of the Cougars, the professional. Greg, how you doing?
Great, Ben. Darnell, good to be with you.
Greg, what did you think of practice? I know you were down there as well. What's your scouting report? How's this BYU basketball team look so far? I know it's early.
Well, I'm sure Darnell would share a similar opinion, but it's a much broader team than it was last year. And granted, they haven't got into the campaign yet to see how rotations are going to work out and who's going to stay healthy and not. But even without Tyler Hawes, there are just more options right now for BYU, and I think that's a positive thing for this team. I'm very excited about the potential of this group. The front line itself, just with the addition of Kyle Davis, the reinsertion of Nate Austin, the introduction of Jamal Ates, when really it was, Corbin Kaufusi having to shoulder so much of that load last year. Just the front line alone is already exponentially better, skill-wise, depth-wise, talent-wise. And then when you're able to introduce someone like Zach Selyus and Nick Emery and Jordan Chapman, who was with the team last year but not really. It was a redshirt year for him, and he was injured most of the year. It looks very different than the squad that Dave Rose put out there last year, only five guys back off last year's roster. But again, these are not negative things. I think everyone that they bring in are guys that can really help this team.
Newcomer Elijah Bryan, I heard, looked pretty good. I know he won't be playing this year, but how did he look, Greg?
Well, he's good. I mean, from when he came in the summer to preseason practices to now, he's a player. I mean, he's going to really help ease the loss of Kyle Collinsworth. No one's Kyle, but this is a big-bodied playmaker who can really shoot it. And so Elijah Bryant's really going to be a benefit to BYU when Kyle Collinsworth graduates. And so, like Chase Fisher before him and Kyle Davis after him, these sit years are kind of tantalizing because they show you the guys that are coming next year. But, he's a good one, and BYU, I thought, got very fortunate by bringing him in at a time they're going to lose Kyle Collinsworth.
Greg, it seems to me that Quincy Lewis has found himself a pretty good role with the program as an assistant coach. Where do you see his contribution coming from? I know Dave's been a little bit cagey about who's going to handle what, who's going to do offense, who's going to do defense. He says they'll share. But it seems to me that Quincy's defensive background would lead him more towards that area. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, right on. That's where you're going to see it. There are new defensive drills. There are new defensive tactics. There's a new defensive approach. And it's pretty much, Dave did the hire, of course. It's Dave's overarching philosophy, but Quincy's being asked to do a lot of that. So there's no doubt that it's on the defensive end that you're going to note Quincy Lewis's contributions most primarily right off the top.
Saw a tweet that you put out. According to Sports Illustrated, they projected the top 100 scorers in college basketball. Chase Fisher coming in at number 14 and Kyle Collinsworth coming in at number 30, respectively. What do you think about those points per game projections? Are you right there in line with them? What do you think?
Well, when you're one of the top scoring teams in the country, the points are going to have to come from somewhere, and those are the two chief candidates. And so BYU is going to score a ton of points. More than last year, I would think, because the shot clock will be shorter. I mean, there'll be more possessions in a game. And so, yeah, not surprising to have, multiple BYU players thought of that way because, without Tyler scoring, his 20 to 25, it'll be a little more spread about. And those are two pretty good candidates right there. I would not be surprised if Kyle Davis becomes a consistent scorer and Nick Emery becomes a consistent scorer for BYU and Jamal Ates and the time he's on the floor. I think Jamal's points per 40 number is going to look pretty good. I'm not sure how many minutes he'll actually play. His health will determine that. But when he's on the floor, I think you'll see a very effective player in the low post.
When did BYU, and you would know this better than anybody, when did BYU begin that up-tempo offense and just run and gun? It seems like they had forecasted properly how college basketball was going to change and having this shortening of the shot clock.
Well, it's kind of been a Dave Rose, philosophy from the get-go. When he got the job, BYU was going to be a program that pushed the pace. That's what he wanted to do. That's how he coaches the game. That's how he approaches it. And I think tempo, for BYU, in the early years, there were a couple of hiccup years where they weren't top 25 in tempo. They were more top 100. But every other year. Since those two, I think it was 2007, 2008, where they dropped into the lower maybe 80 to 100 area in terms of tempo, they've been top 20, top 10 every year under Dave Rose. In fact, if you look at the last 4 years, they've been no lower than 10 in terms of tempo. That's how he coaches. It's how he plays. And it's how they score all the points they do.
Yeah, Dave really delivered on his promise, didn't he, Greg? When he first took the job, he said he was going to run. And we hear that from almost every coach that takes a job. But Dave brought in the players that could do it, and he kept it up. And he's brought in players that really thrive in that system.
Absolutely. And you know, the question to Dave yesterday was more about how you know, the 30-second clock will affect the teams they're playing, because it won't affect them at all. I mean, this new rule change has no meaning to BYU other than the fact that there will be more possessions in the game and more chances to score. And that's why I think BYU's points per game number will go up over last year, because there will be more opportunities to score. But how they play will not change at all, whereas some teams in this league, the WCC, you'll note it. I mean, they'll have to address it because, again, like Dave said yesterday, you know, a lot of their plans is to get under 10 before they want to think of shooting, and now that time is going to come 5 seconds quicker.
Voice of the Cougars on the Cougar MG Sports Network. Greg Rebell on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. Greg, let's go to the gridiron. Do you see a scenario in which Bo Hodge doesn't play in this game, at least in a minimal, you know, package type of performance on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, I may be naive, but I hope that he doesn't have to play a down. I hope that Tanner Mangum can go start to finish. I think if he doesn't, that's not a good thing. I hope that he's healthy enough to do it. And so that's, I guess, where I'd go on that. Not that I don't respect or trust Bo Hodge, but I think, you know, Tanner's got to be the guy. I don't know that having a package. I mean, if you intend to play Tanner after Bo Hodge comes in and leaves, you know, in a true package sense, you know, why even have the package? I just think that he's got to be the guy, and hopefully his health lets him be the guy start to finish, because you've got 2 weeks off after that. I don't know that Tanner should take a snap against Wagner, and the bye is after that. So I would hope that he's able to manage the injury to get through Cincy, because this is a team you need to keep pace with. I don't think you can go into Cincinnati saying, well, we can you know, play him this percentage or that percentage or this many series. I think he's got to be your guy, and hopefully he's healthy for the whole game. Again, this is just my kind of you know, very casual observation of what BYU might need, but I think that Tanner's got to be your guy for every meaningful down against Cincy. Then you give him a couple weeks off to get ready for November, and then pack, you know, line it up for these last four games.
Greg, one of the most surprising stats to me the last few years for this BYU offense has been how many sacks they give up, yet how they score so many points despite giving up so many sacks. I don't know if you've looked at those correlations. Sacks typically limit points, you know, when you're giving up a lot of those, or is this kind of a phenomenon at BYU?
Well, I think as long as BYU's been a pass-heavy team, you can overcome the lost yardage because of how often and how well you're going to throw it. I think more than anything else, the risk of that kind of number is purely a practical one, and that is, can you keep your guy healthy? You know, can he get hit that many times? Can he get sacked that many times and still be a 13-game guy for you? So, you know, less than a win-loss correlation. I think it's more about a health or no health correlation. And you know, to me, that's always the greater concern. If you're going to say that BYU will be sacking, or the Tanner Mangum will be sacked four times a game, you know, it's kind of playing with fire a little bit.
Greg, it appears to most of us that the BYU defense will be pretty much full strength tomorrow night. Do you think their performance against East Carolina was an anomaly because of those injuries, or are we still concerned about that defensive backfield specifically? But Cincinnati is a team that can both run it and pass it. So where do you see this defense tomorrow night?
I don't know. I kind of see BYU as that team that in some ways kind of adheres to Broncos' philosophy, and this would go back to a time when Ben can, you know, to a time that, you know, Ben can acknowledge and relate to, and that is we'll let you do a lot of stuff in front of us until it really comes down to time to make a play, and then they tend to make a play. That's why you see BYU's pass efficiency defense number is really lagging, but their passes intercepted number really shining. They've been a playmaking defense that way. Yet teams have been able to kind of you know, work their way downfield against BYU. And Bronco, again, philosophically says we don't necessarily believe that you'll be able to do it consistently all game to score enough points to beat us. I think at least that's what I've observed to this point. Because, again, BYU's pass numbers aren't stellar, but the plays made in pass defense, you know, whether from defensive linemen, linebackers, or defensive backs, have all been pretty great.
Greg, what are we beholding in Tanner Mangum? How special is this kid? I mean, you've been calling these games for him, and the Hail Marys. It's been an awesome season, I think, for BYU fans, even though they've lost two games because of Tanner Mangum.
Well, the sample size is still relatively small when you look at the BYU program historically, because you know back in the day, when Darnell and I were students at BYU, that was still a time when the philosophy at BYU was you're going to get 2 years to be the starting quarterback. You're going to come in, you're going to learn, you might back up as a sophomore, then we'll hand the ball to you as a junior and a senior. And that was really the pattern for the longest of times. It wasn't until the late 90s when BYU was forced into things like, playing Drew Miller, then playing Matt Barry, and then playing John Beck, and then playing Jake Heaps. And these were not preferences. These were kind of necessities. And in none of those situations did you end up with the guy that you said, man, he's going to be, that you could tell off the top he's going to be a superstar because of how he commands the team from the get-go. But that has kind of been Tanner Mangum's situation. He looks a little different that way. And, of course, he differs from a lot of those guys, John Beck and Matt Barry being somewhat of the exception, as they were also, return missionaries. But I think you're seeing a guy that is able to be that unique and rare talent who, as a first-year player, gives a presence and kind of commands a locker room or a sideline to the point where he inspires a lot of confidence in the rest of his teammates. And I think then beyond that, just from a technique standpoint and a performance standpoint, you can tell Tanner's the real deal. And however long he's at BYU, I think they have one of the best quarterbacks that they'll have had in the last 10, 20 years.
Forecast for us what you think this BYU-Cincy game will be like, high-flying, high-scoring.
I don't see how it won't be. Cincy's averaging around 40, allowing around 30, and BYU shown the last couple of games the ability to get up there as well. I think they could have scored 50 against UConn. They scored 45 last week. I see this one being kind of a back-and-forth, wild one, high-scoring game. Again, if it turns out differently, Bronco says it all the time. He's never been able to predict accurately how a game's going to go. And sometimes you think it's going to go one way and you turn out with somewhat of a slugfest. But that would be very much atypical for the way these two teams are playing right now. I mean, every good team that Cincy has played, they've been scored on. And by the same token, they've been scoring a ton too. So that kind of puts in line, it goes in line with what BYU's been since the Michigan game. And again, Michigan's doing it to everybody right now. So that 31-0 game looks a little different in hindsight. But that's kind of how I guess I'd forecast it.
Greg, if you're a part of this BYU defense, would you rather see Hayden Moore or Gunnar Keel, or does it even matter?
I don't know that it matters. After what Hayden Moore came in and did the first time around, he's passed for 560 off the bench. That was after Keel had already gone for a buck something himself. So I don't think that Cincy has too much in the way of varying play calls for these two guys. It's going to be whoever's in there. And again, the run game is certainly a part of their attack. They're relatively balanced that way. But it's not like Moore can run it and Keel can't, or Keel can run it and Moore can't. Neither guy's in there to gain yards. There are some ride looks, there are some read looks, but the keeps are for minimal gains. These guys are basically there to throw it and sling it, and they've thrown it to a bunch of different guys. It's amazing how many guys, they've already got five guys with multiple touchdown receptions on the year. They really do spread it around, and they also are kind of, not necessarily careless, but they've given up 10 picks as well. I mean, 12 touchdowns and 10 picks. That's a pretty low ratio for touchdowns to picks. Of the top passing teams, that's the worst ratio in the country. That said, BYU is right behind Cincinnati in terms of that ratio, touchdowns to picks. So both kind of follow a similar tactic right now, and it's really reliant on the throw game.
Greg, the women's soccer team down at BYU, 11-1-1, only lost to Stanford. Talk to me about this team. They're having a great season.
Great season, trying to work through some late season bumps and bruises and keep those 3 points coming. I think they're of the belief that big game is just around the bend where they're going to really unleash, a 3 or 4 or 5 goal attack. So far, the ceiling has been 2 goals, but that's been enough to get 11 wins in 13 matches. The defense has been stellar. And again, you sense that it's just a matter of time until they really get loose and get on track against someone. And maybe Pacific is that team. They come in on Saturday, and Portland just beat them 4-0. And so Pacific's a little more susceptible capable, and BYU, I think, is just is about ready to unleash it on someone because of all the shots they're putting out there. I mean, last game, 49 shots officially, and one finds the back of the net. You know, Jen Rockwood knows that her team can do better, and they'll look to start on that path Saturday.
Greg, your time is precious. Thanks for joining us for a few minutes.
Pleasure anytime. Darnell and Ben, I will talk to you soon. We'll see you guys both at the game tomorrow night.